Hey, it's Aaron Hogan, Genesis driver, encouraging you to experience the difference between ordinary and extraordinary with the Genesis GV80 at Genesis of Round Rock. You'll discover bold design, advanced technology, and refined power. And this month at Genesis of Round Rock, enjoy ultra-low APR financing, just 0.49% APR for up to 48 months on select 2026 GV80 models. You heard that right, 0.49%. Get out there and see them at Genesis of Round Rock, 2201 North May Street, or explore your options online at genesisofroundrock.com. Luxury never looks so good. Welcome to Genesis.
From the 102.7 ESPN studios in Austin, Texas, this is the Jeff and Ed Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. France goes down. France goes down. Spain just beat France 2-0 in the World Cup semifinals. I'm Kyle Owen, and this is the Producer Power Hour, joined by Trey Campbell, Tay Gustafson, Andrew Salazar. Today we got a fun show lined up for you guys. A lot of topics go on. We had the Home Run Derby last night, MLB All-Star Game today, lots of World Cup action, and some fun stuff we got lined up for you. So we'll get things started off with the Home Run Derby last night. I mean, it was a new format, a brand new format, and the first time there's a new format since 2015. They went away from the time clock that they've had in the past, I guess, 8 years now, and now each player gets 20 swings to hit as many balls as they possibly can. On the final swing, they get a magenta ball, where if they hit the magenta ball, get a home run, then they get to keep swinging until they no longer get a home run. Top four home run hitters from the opening round move on to the semifinals. Four best going against home run leaders. Second and third going in their own matchup. The semifinals yesterday, Wilson Contreras and Kyle Schwarber went against each other. Schwarber ended up beating Contreras in that one, and Jordan Walker and Junior Caminero. In the second semifinal matchup, Jordan Walker won that one. Schwarber heads out Contreras 9-8, and it was unfortunate for Wilson Contreras, because he actually hit more home runs than both Jordan Walker and Junior Caminero, but the way that things were set up, he was no longer allowed to advance. So Caminero and Walker, their matchup, Caminero had 5 and Walker had 6, and that teed up for a Schwarber-Walker final. And well, the magenta ball, it wasn't a factor at all in the first two rounds of the tournament, but it was a factor in the final rounds. I know this is a new thing. What do y'all think about that magenta ball and the way they kind of did it this time around instead of the pitch clock, they did swings?
So could you theoretically stand in the box and just not swing the bat and just be out there for hours?
I guess technically you could.
That would be a great way to waste everybody's time.
I mean, I did see whenever everybody was kind of getting tired, they'd step out and they just sat there and they just kind of took pitches back to back to back until they felt like it was something they could square up on and get down deep without having to put too much power behind it.
Yeah, I guess they gave it a real old school baseball feel. You know, no clock, just all swings. I don't mind it, I guess. I would rather there be more urgency. I think that would make it more exciting, but I guess it didn't really affect the derby all too much. Nobody went out and hit 91 home runs like we saw Vlad Guerrero Jr. do that one time. But
yeah, Josh Hamilton had a lot as well one time. And yeah, it's definitely interesting the way that the swing concept is. Instead of having outs, they have swings. So like, even if they do hit a home run, it's considered a swing.
Right.
And the only time it really factors in is that final magenta ball, like I said, that where the swings, if you hit a home run at the magenta ball, then you get to keep going until you don't hit a home run. But as we saw last night, it really didn't affect much. So, I mean, it was nice to see them to revert back to no pitch clock, because it just kind of, it made things go a little too quickly, and it prevented guys from having as many home runs as they possibly could, because they were having to rush themselves and try to get as many pitches to them as possible, and so people weren't able to kind of be prepared for what exactly the ball they wanted to have. So, I mean, it was a very interesting situation. I enjoyed it. I do wish that that there would be, there's more opportunities for more home runs to be had. I mean, the most we saw yesterday was 13.
Yeah, that wasn't that many.
And so that's not that many. And the home run derby is a showcase of power and the greatest hitters in MLB right now. So it would be nice to see more home runs.
Right. But. And I think they kind of instituted that whole 20 swings thing to make it seem like there would be more opportunities for home runs. But if they wanted more home runs, they should have not counted a home run as an out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's kind of dumb. That's kind of counterintuitive to me.
Like, kind of keep the magenta ball rule, but for all the balls.
Yeah. So
whereas, like, if you hit a home run, it doesn't count as an out.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do that next year.
Yeah.
But I think that I liked it when they had the outs. I thought that was kind of cool because you got to see that eighth grader in a Twins jersey try and catch a center fielder from Barry Bonds. That was always fun.
Yeah.
I miss that aspect of the game.
Yeah, I mean,
they're still there, but, you know.
Yeah, it's not as big of a deal in this time around. I mean, so last night was the first time Netflix has ever hosted the Home Run Derby. What did you think about that, Trey?
I'm kind of annoyed with all these things being on streaming now, but I guess that's where the money goes, you know? I was out and about, so I caught the highlights, but I couldn't see it on any of the TVs in the bar. So I was like, this could pose an issue, but I guess bars have moved along with the times. So
what would you rather watch it on? Would you just have it on cable?
Yeah, just put it on. Yeah, put it on ABC.
Yeah,
or put it on basic cable.
That's fair. I did enjoy seeing Hunter Pence last night.
Yeah.
We don't get to see him
shout
in the booth very
Hunter
often.
Pence.
He's one of my favorite, like, all-time players.
Mine, too.
He's a great guy. But I thought it was cool. They brought in, Barry Bonds as well to do some of the commentators and so commentation. So it was, I thought it was a fun little, you know, production that Netflix put on. It kind of was clunky at first, but by the end of it, they kind of got into their flow state and
was this their
things
first,
went well.
Was this their first baseball game?
I think they had opening day.
Right.
They had an opening day game, but apparently it went really, really bad. So this was kind of their next trial run, and it went a little better.
I think Netflix needs to step out of the sports streaming game. They've got all these other things. You know
what have they done so far? They did the fight.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, yeah,
they do a Christmas Day football game.
Okay. Yep.
I'm tired of Netflix coming in and trying to take sports away. They should all just be on ABC or something.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I do like about the Netflix having the broadcast is you get to see people that you don't normally get to see on broadcast. That
right.
You know, the Fox and the ESPN guys that all have everything. So you get to see new faces in that. I think I enjoy that, but. But
there's also no ads.
There's totally ads.
Yeah, there's a ton of ads.
That's another thing streaming services do that really, really make me mad. They always play these stupid ads. I'm paying you $14.95 a month
to
not
have ads.
Yeah,
even if you have the nice premium version of Netflix, is there still ads?
Yeah.
Well, for this, because it's a live sporting event, it's how they're going to make their money is basically, I mean, like, because I don't know if you have to have a membership to watch the live sports games.
Really?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know, though.
You might be right, yeah.
But yeah, no, they force ads upon you there, just like any other TV show or live sporting event they're going to put on ads. But so I did mention earlier, so the magenta ball really didn't have any effect at all until the final round, and it was very interesting because the first batter in the final round was Kyle Schwarber, and he actually was the first person to hit a magenta ball out of the park and brought his home run total to 11, but right after that, he didn't hit a home run again, so it just stayed right there. Jordan Walker came up to bat, and he had only hit 8 home runs going into the magenta ball, trailing Schwarber by 3. Nobody had hit the magenta ball more than once, but here's what happened.
This was the first.
What may or may not be the final swing of the bat tonight.
At least get it to 10 for us. Come on. Come on, baseball gods. Jordan Walker has put on an absolute show, regardless of this last ball, to make it to the finals. He has shown the talent.
There we go. It's one. Number 9 for He has got a George Hendrick cool about him that is so impressive.
Unless! Unless!
Closer still with number 10.
Wow!
Home run derby debut walks it off with three home runs back to back to back, or four home runs back to back to back, with only eight home runs going into the Magenta Ball. And well, he took advantage of it and beat Kyle Schwarber, the hometown kid, in the home run derby, as it was in Philly last night. Ends up winning that one, Jordan Walker. Huge moment for him. And he's been one of the hottest batters in baseball this year, so it's kind of cool to see him get the home run derby title.
Yeah, he's been great for the Cardinals. He's really kind of been their best player this year.
Isn't he he's the first one since Albert Pujols to win it.
Yeah.
The Cardinal to win it.
Yeah, you're right.
I think he's the only other one since Albert Pujols to ever do it.
I think you're right. I'd have to look that up. But it's been
maybe McGuire at one point.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure he was definitely a candidate, but it's great to see the Cardinals kind of back. Baseball's better when those legacy teams are playing better. So the Cardinals are kind of on the way, on a good trajectory, and Jordan Walker winning the home run derby is a good consolation prize for a young team.
Yeah, speaking of legacy teams kind of finally coming back, is the White Sox. They're turning into something. I mean,
they're first place.
Matsuyama, right?
Montaki? Yeah.
Last night, the home run derby, he didn't do too hot. He didn't get out of the round of the opening round, but definitely having him back, or having him with the White Sox, kind of makes things more fun.
Yeah, he's got I think he's coming up on a club. He's got an option. This is an option year for him, so he might be a free agent here pretty soon. But he's been really crushing it. He could have had a lot more home runs, but he was out for a few weeks with an injury.
Yeah, which was surprising that he even did the home run derby being out like that.
But I think he kind of knew this was good for the brand to go out there, and he's been at the top of the home run leaders for a lot of the year. So I liked seeing him go out and play. He's definitely made that White Sox team exciting to watch, and I'm happy for the White Sox. They've had horrible ownership, and they've kind of stumbled upon a good little team with Chase Bydroth and all those guys on the White Sox and Montaki. So I'm excited for them, and I'm excited to see what happens with Montaki, where he goes and if he stays with the White Sox or not. But yeah, home run derby is great. A great sign of the summer. Really, nothing else is going on, and it's good to have the home run derby to kind of keep everybody entertained.
They had first pick in the MLB draft, correct?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
I don't know if you want to get into the draft right now, or if you want that's sort of a later topic. But how were their draft picks? Because I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention to that. Did they make any good draft picks at all?
I mean, they had the number one pick, so I'm sure it was pretty good. I'm going to be honest, I haven't really paid attention to the draft. It happened on Sunday. I was pretty busy, but But yeah, they did have the first draft pick. I think the way that it goes is it's pretty interesting because MLB is the only league that does their draft in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
Right at the middle of the season, too. So, like, a lot of those guys that come in through the draft, I mean, most of them probably won't see an MLB field this year. So it's one of those situations you kind of get your guys underneath your wing and bring them up through the farm system during the rest of the season, and hopefully maybe by the end of the season you've got somebody you can hold up for depth in the playoffs. So
has the MLB always had a draft lottery, or is that new? Because I know they had a lottery this year.
I think that's pretty new. I do know that they're proposing a bunch of new stuff for next year's draft. They're looking to, I know that they're trying to go away from drafting high school players. I think they want to drop it down to like only 5 rounds or something like that.
Right.
And it's going to become more of a selection, like a more selective process. And it's going to allow guys to go to college more often.
Yeah.
And that should help the college game, which is also at a very high point right now, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. There's going to be a lot that the MLB is going to have to fix because they're encroaching a lockout and
oh, yeah.
It's not looking great. So I'd imagine the draft, they still have the Rule 5 draft. Would they keep that? I'd imagine they'd get rid of the Rule 5 draft too.
Yeah, probably so.
I always kind of like the Rule 5 drafts because a lot of teams would be irrelevant and they'd try and draft like a player from another sport. I think one time the Padres drafted Johnny Manziel.
Oh yeah, that's definitely happened.
That's my favorite thing about baseball drafts. They'll just like get to like round 30 and they'll be like, all right, any of our athletes on our team have a nephew that needs to play?
Yeah, one of the Brewers drafted a guy from Texas State named Chase Mora, and he played second base for most of his time there and then moved over to third base last year, and they actually ended up drafting him as a pitcher.
Yeah,
he
heard
didn't
about that.
Pitch a single ball for Texas State his whole time there. So it's very interesting sometimes with the way that the draft rolls is who they pick and where they pick and why they pick them. It's an interesting game, and shortening the draft will definitely help with kind of solidifying the real prospects versus just the guys that get drafted and thrown aside into, you know, high A or whatever for the rest of their careers.
Yeah.
So Home Run Derby last night, it was a fun one. Like I said, France just fell to Spain 2-0. We're going to go ahead and take a break. Call or text 512-834-1027 on here on 102.7 ESPN. We'll be right back after this.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN.
You got me!
The galaxy is safe once again.
Sometimes kids play with pretend guns. It's up to us to make sure they don't play with real ones. Keep yours stored locked and unloaded. Learn more at nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 102.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Producer Power Hour. I'm Kyle Owen, joined by Trey Campbell, Tate Gustafson, and Drew Salazar.
Hey, hey.
We just talked about the Home Run Derby last night. Good win by Jordan Walker. Walker walked it off and for his first ever Home Run Derby championship. Very interesting situation with the magenta balls and all that. So pretty good. But we got the World Cup going on. It is, you know, currently the dog days of summer, but the World Cup is coming to an end. We've got one more matchup tomorrow before the finals, and then the third place matchup will be on Saturday, and then the finals will be on Sunday. Tomorrow, the matchup between England and Argentina, England and Argentina in Atlanta should be a really good game. You know, Messi, obviously the best player in the world. England, probably one of the more physical and hardest working teams in the World Cup. You could see that against Mexico and Norway and those games before. So this year, the World Cup for the first time ever went to a 48-team knockout round. It was an upsets, drama, compelling matches, all that. But it was ended up being chalk in the Final Four for the first time ever. So that is the top four teams, number one France, two Argentina, three Spain, and four England, unless it's the other way around. for France and or Spain and England. But either way, the top four all made it into the semifinals for the first time ever. And I don't know if y'all think this was, you know, a situation where the lengthy knockout round really exposed teams with less depth and allowed these four front runner teams to kind of work their way into the semifinals because of the depth they have. I don't know. It's just something that I thought about that contributed to chalk this time around. But what about you, Trey?
I just think that at the end of the day, the best teams are going to find a way to win. And Spain has been probably the best team defensively all this whole time.
Yeah, conceding only
all
one
World
goal.
Cup, yeah. And they did that again today. So I just think that no matter what, even if you have like, even if you expand it to 64 teams, the powerhouse teams are always going to find the way to win. And that's kind of what we've been seeing. I think they're kind of doing the March Madness type thing where they're saying, okay, maybe if we have more games, there'll be more upsets. And I guess it'll mean more to the teams that aren't there all the time. And I can see why CONMEBOL is making this. Or Knoebel, or however you say it. I don't know. Y'all are going to have to bear with me on this one, on the pronunciations. But I feel like the reason why they are pushing for this is because they want teams from their confederation to get in, like Venezuela or, you know, some of those Central American teams. They want to see more of those teams get in.
Yeah, it was interesting because CONCACAF, the North American Federation, they're completely against it.
Right.
Whereas CONMEBOL is completely for it. So it's an interesting situation there. But after, you know, basically seeing the round of 48 almost complete, it's not done yet. Do y'all think that the round of 48 was good? Should they revert back?
The round of 32? Yeah, I think that it's fine. I mean, it definitely added more drama to you know, that Algeria and Iran game, or I can't remember. There was one game where Algeria came back and won, and then they had this big game to decide who was the last third place finisher, and that was really dramatic. I guess that's kind of cool, but I feel like it takes away the sort of the allure and the prestige of the World Cup. Yeah, because you know, as much as I can appreciate Cabo Verde and their runs and all these smaller countries, you know, it's tough to kind of say that some of these teams should be here.
Well,
you
Cabo
know?
Verde would have been in even in
the
old
format.
Yeah,
that's true.
So.
Yeah, and that's a good point. What are some of the teams that got in?
So Paraguay was one of the big ones that I was thinking of. So Paraguay, they were the third place team in the group that the United States was in. And even though the United States absolutely dismantled them in their first game, they were able to come out and beat Germany, who won their group. So it brought interesting matchups like that into form. So I think that's kind of a cool situation there. I don't think going back to the old way that they've had for the past, you know, seven World Cups or whatever it was, since I think 94 would be the way to go about it.
No.
But I think it was a good draw. I think it was a fun tournament, and I enjoyed the length of it as well.
As someone who's not a soccer fanatic, I would say, I think that I'm actually for FIFA World Cup expansions, because look at Cape Verde, just the storyline of it, of like these underdog storylines. To the average person who doesn't watch soccer, you know, most Americans watching this World Cup have never watched soccer club games.
I feel like that's what they did it for, though, was for the American audience.
But what I'm saying is that people were rallying for Cape Verde because they were really taking on really big teams, and they weren't winning, but they were making draws, or they could have beat Argentina, but their defenses were really doing really good. So I think expanding that, I know there's this whole thing about exclusivity and how to make it sort of this this premier, almost this exclusive environment where only a select number of teams can go in. But I think that I'm just someone who loves the grandiosity of it, someone who loves like the world. This is a major world event. Get as many countries in as possible and let them duke it out. I just like that sort of big aspect
it's
of
the World Cup. I feel like the more the merrier, you know? Mm-hmm. Exclusivity, I feel like, should be the last thing we're trying to do with this. So bring everyone. I mean, it only happens every 4 years, right?
Feel like, what if you had 64 teams, what would the group stage be like? Would there be like the top 12 third place finishing teams?
Yeah, maybe they expand the groups to 5 and 3 get in or something like that. Or maybe you just have more groups than you've had before. It is definitely an interesting concept, but we mentioned it. CONMEBOL was the federation that was trying to introduce it. They're the South American Football Confederation. Infantino, the president of FIFA, he discussed that proposal with the president, Alejandro Dominguez, and the presidents of the Argentine and Uruguayan football associations, as well as the presidents of the countries of Paraguay and Uruguay. They had a meeting in New York about it to kind of, you know, lay out the prospect of having that 64-team tournament. Gianni Infantino believes that it should be expanded. He said it's an issue that will be examined and discussed in relevant committees after the World Cup. When organizing a World Cup, he says it's important to organize it for the whole world. Every nation should be allowed to dream of participating in the World Cup. If you don't give the smaller countries a chance to participate in the World Cup, they'll lack the incentive to keep trying to improve. So, like you said, Tate, it is, you know, the exclusivity is the classic way to look at the World Cup. And some people are like Trey or think that that's the best way to go about it. And on the other hand, there's the people that believe that, you know, the World Cup is a place to bring the world together and allowing more teams to prove their potential in soccer is something that expanding the World Cup can maybe take a hold of. So,
but I also wonder why, like, I'm someone who's for the expansion, but I'm wondering why Infantino is saying it in the first place, or why he's promoting it. Is it a money thing?
Well,
from
what I think is the question, I mean, because it was brought up, so CONMEBOL said it, and so people are going to ask Infantino about it, just because naturally they're going to be like, hey, like, what do you think of this? And so his job is to basically make everybody in soccer feel like they're a part of FIFA. And so he's just trying to make that the World Cup more
global.
Yeah, global, I guess.
It's about money.
Well, yeah, it's about money. Because at the end of the day, the more games, the more money. And it's already a multi-billion-dollar industry, the World Cup is. And so,
yeah.
So
it's
going to
happen.
So,
if it's going to happen, then why not let everyone in on it, you know?
Yeah, so one thing, it is interesting. So the next World Cup in 2030, it's actually going to be done across 6 different countries, 3 different continents, because it's the centennial. So the main hosts will be Spain, Portugal, and Morocco. And then they're also going to have games in Uruguay, Paraguay, and in Argentina to celebrate the centennial.
Yeah.
Paraguay or Uruguay having been the first host of the first ever World Cup. So it'll be interesting to see, because if you can expand it, maybe you can keep, you know, South American countries in South America for the first round or the group stage or whatever, and then, you know, bring everybody over to Europe and Africa, Northern Africa, for the rest of it.
So they're doing all 3 confederations are getting to host parts of the World Cup next year.
It's Morocco is going to have Morocco's a host, Spain's a host, and Portugal's a host,
right?
And then they're going to play, we don't know how many or what games in the 3 South American countries because of the centennial.
Yeah.
But that's kind of all we really know right now, at least.
Yeah, so. I would think that, you know, I just think what it all boils down to when it comes to expansion, when you hear this about any tournament, it's just to get more revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, and it might be good, but I just don't want to water down the game, you know?
Yeah, so here's what CBS Sports, they have a show called Galazzo. This is what they had to say about the 64-team tournament.
What are we going to do? A month-long, two-month tournament okay with you?
How do we feel about 64? Could it be a couple too many? for another expansion?
The expanded version is just allowing more teams to enjoy the culture, the vibes, the energy that everything brings. And we can have our question marks around the so-called quality, like I've seen the UEFA president have, like I've seen a number of people questioning whether or not this was going to be riddled with enough quality. And I'll remind everybody, if this does get expanded, we'll find more stories like Cabo Verde, we'll find more stories like Haiti, we'll have more stories as football fans around the world to enjoy and to appreciate.
I believe right now qualifying is all over the world, so yes, every team has an opportunity to qualify. What are we going to do? A month long, month and a two month tournament? Okay with you? 2 months maybe?
We'll play. Like 8 weeks.
4 years. Let's see how it's been.
Listen,
4 years.
You did 1 year at 48 teams, and now you're like, oh, great, let's go to 64. How about give it a year or two, three World Cups? Let's run through a few cycles, see how it goes. Let's sit back and relax and think about it and watch it for the next World Cup. And then maybe we decide after the next two or three World Cups.
To your point, and I think it's a really important one, you get to bring in some countries that would never have a chance otherwise, and you can see how much it means to those respective countries.
I'm kind of with that guy. They should wait at least another World Cup.
I think that's a good one, because, I mean, like kind of like March Madness has done, they just, you know, every year they're adding more, and same with the playoffs, they wanted, like, or the college football playoffs, is they don't even allow it to work its way through and see if it actually works. They're just like, oh, didn't work this time, let's try something new. So I think that is a good point. Maybe, you know, let it ride out a little longer to see how much it's affecting and how and if it is working well, and maybe eventually think about expanding it. I mean, they have over the past 100 years of World Cups, they've expanded it from, you know, 16 to now to 48, and so 64 is probably inevitable at some point in time, but the next World Cup, I'm not sure about that.
I don't know. If it was every year, I would give it a couple years and make it figure it out, but this is every 4 years. Yeah. So, like, big changes, I feel like, need to be made, or else it's going to be a decade before we see something new, before these smaller countries get a team.
Mm-hmm. I agree. How would you even figure that out when there's like a year in advance of qualifying runs? How would you figure out that whole changing that whole system?
Well, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how they're going to do it, but I mean, you have qualification, of course, but qualification requirements are going to be different, so they're going to allow, if they're going to allow more teams, then each, you know, each confederation is going to get allotted X amount more teams to be qualified. So it is interesting, because, like, you have Oceania, like, they literally only have two or three countries.
New Zealand and Australia.
And Australia. So, like, are we guaranteeing both of them a spot, or do they get to, you know, do they compete in the Asian tournaments now? It is definitely going to be interesting. Like, are we going to combine the CONCACAF and CONCABOL CONMEBOL to have one big qualification between the Americas, and will, you know, maybe Africa and Europe combined? It is an interesting concept to kind of think about, but I think that expanding it is a positive thing. Like we said, that coming up in the next one, I think it is going to be, the logistics are going to be a little too hard to expand it to 64 teams between the six countries that they're trying to have host. So I think maybe waiting it out would be a good one. But Tate, your point is pretty good about, like, you know, yeah, it is every 4 years. So, like, you really have to think about the future when you're, you know, once the World Cup is already done, you got to think about getting to the next one.
Also in that clip, he was saying, like, oh, what, is there going to be a month? Is it going to be 2 months? Like, why can't it be?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Like I said, like, 4 years, what's 2 months?
I guess maybe in the defensive club teams, they're losing their players for that amount of time, because they're already losing them for a couple weeks before the World Cup, and then having them be playing elsewhere for X amount of time, and the more games they have to play, the more chance of injuries and stuff like that to happen. So the clubs who own the rights to these players are probably not looking forward to having them play
and
exert themselves way more than they already are.
They already play enough games with their clubs. And as a Manchester City supporter, if Erling Haaland goes down playing for Norway, I would be pretty mad. So I think that the clubs are definitely not going to be a fan of more games. But at the end of the day, it's about growing the game on a global stage. And if that can grow the game on a global stage, then they're just going to do it.
We saw how you were when Norway lost.
I was pretty...
You were kicking and screaming.
That's the team I was rooting against.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was rooting for England.
Oh, yeah, you were rooting for England. That is very fair. So, so this is one controversy that the World Cups has. We have another one with the, obviously, the Balogun red card. It is going to be... that situation was definitely interesting because, like, obviously, Balogun red card, most people, when they saw it, it wasn't going to be... nobody thought that it was going to be a red card. People thought that maybe, okay, yeah, he's going to get a yellow because he stepped on the guy's ankle, but it was obviously not intentional. So when it came back as a red card, obviously, Balogun was surprised. So that being the biggest scandal of the World Cup, probably... President Trump getting involved made it even worse.
Yeah, that was terrible.
He said that he sent in a request to call or to overturn the call. He said at a White House briefing that all I did was ask for a review and whether or not the call has changed and made an influence, it was overturned. So at the end of the day, we do know that the call was made and it was changed quickly after that. But typically when you get your best scorer back, you're usually pretty happy about it and you think it'd be a good thing. But Balogun admits that it just caused controversy and maybe even an unwanted distraction within the team. Maybe that was the reason why the United States looked completely outclassed against Belgium. Probably not, but Balogun didn't dismiss it.
Yeah, let's go.
No, so let's talk about that red card suspension. It received a lot of attention. A lot of fans thought it was not deserved. What was your, I mean, I saw your reaction.
Fans that had eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Your reaction on the field was one of devastation. But what was going through your mind?
You know, I was in shock. You know, it wasn't even a tackle, you know.
So right.
I was totally in shock. I think you could see my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I just had to accept the decision and, you know, just try and be there for my team. But, you know, as I said, I was definitely in shock.
And you knew that it wasn't justified. You felt it wasn't justified.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, when something's not intentional, you know, it should never be mm-hmm. a red card. So it was just an unfortunate situation. And I think, you know, it put a lot more pressure on us than we needed.
Mm-hmm. And once the president got involved and made the call and then it was reversed, were you thinking, yay, this is good? Or were you thinking, I don't know if this is such a good thing for the team or for myself at this particular time? Because then that turned into a whole nother layer of controversy.
My initial reaction was, you know, I was happy to be back in the team.
Yeah.
But when I kind of started to reflect, I knew it was going to cause a lot of controversy. And I could almost see within my teammates a bit of nerves because it's something that's so unique.
Mm-hmm.
But the closer we got to the game, I tried to just focus as best as I could.
Yeah.
But it was difficult, you know, a lot of outside noise, and that's hard to avoid.
Yeah.
We saw the U.S. men's national team do relatively well this year in the World Cup. How do you think that reflects on American soccer? We're seeing the growth of the popularity of the sport nationwide. World Cup doing, you know, great business here in the U.S. How did that feel?
It was amazing to be a part
of. So, obviously, like Balogun said, it was definitely an unwanted distraction within the team. I don't know necessarily if that's the reason why Belgium was able to put BTA against the United States, but it may have had a factor as well. But at the end of the day, the United States was outclassed by Belgium, and they won that fair and square. I don't think with or without the controversy, at the end of the day, I think the United States would have been picked apart just as they were in this situation.
So just sucks it left a stain on the game.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit, yeah. And you got to give a lot of credit to Balogun. He had a great tournament.
Yeah.
And he's going to definitely get a lot of exposure here in America.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that was good.
Yeah.
But,
and it gives people to look, it gives everybody some things to look forward to the next World Cup as well.
Because
you look into that, and most of this team is young and got room for improvement. So look forward to that. But we're going to go ahead and take another break. We'll be back here shortly. Don't forget to call or text 512-834-1027. That's 512-834-1027. We'll be right back after this.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN.
You got me!
The galaxy is safe once again.
Sometimes kids play with pretend guns. It's up to us to make sure they don't play with real ones. Keep yours stored locked and unloaded. Learn more at nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by nFamily Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Check out the podcast page at 1027ESPN.com. Now back to the Jeff and Ed Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Producer Power Hour. I'm Kyle Owen, joined by Trey Campbell, Tate Gustafson, and Drew Salazar. Had a fun show already lined up for you, but we've already talked about the Home Run Derby, the World Cup, expansion, possibly some Bolligan red card situation, and we got a lot of stuff coming up. But there is some breaking news going on right now. Cowboys pass rusher Charles Snowden has been suspended for 3 games by the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys outside linebacker has been suspended for the first 3 games of the 2026 season. He'll be eligible to take part in all of the Cowboys preseason activities, including preseason games, and the suspension will take effect after the roster reduction to 53 players. Nobody knows the real reason behind the suspension. There's no actual reason stated, but there is a speculation that it was because of his DUI arrest that he had against the Vegas Raiders. He reached a plea agreement in January to resolve that DUI arrest while he was with the Raiders. With his attorneys, he pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor DUI charge, ordered to pay $1,000, and had DUI courses. The charge will be reduced to reckless driving as long as he completes his plea agreement. And the Cowboys signed him as a free agent last month after he tried out during minicamp, had 3 sacks in 15 games in an interception with the Raiders last year. He's 28 years old, and he'll be missing the first 3 games for the Cowboys. That is, if he even makes the roster. They did sign him short term before that reduction to 53 players. He will be able to play in preseason games, but that is kind of what's going on in the Cowboys world right now. Like I said, next hour we've got some good stuff coming up for you. It is National Mac and Cheese Day.
Is it really?
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. It's National Mac and Cheese Day. We've got a lot of summertime activities that we're going to talk about, a little mock draft going with that, and then some of our favorite movies so far of the summer. So we'll go ahead, take another quick break, and we'll be back after this. Be sure to call or text at 512-834-1027. That's 512-834-1027, and we'll be right back after these.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 1027 ESPN.
What you think of my new saddle, Lizard?
Oh, yeah, swell, mate. Proper comfy.
Just one of the upgrades I've added to this puppy.
What else have you got on here?
New air intake filter, quick shifter, and a beefy muffler.
Well, that's why you ride with GEICO Motorcycle Insurance, so you can cover your custom parts and equipment. Now let's hear that muffler purr.
All right, hang on tight to my love handles.
It feels good to ride with help. It feels good to GEICO.